Masechta Tainis, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Taisis Diri Maschil, Kala Oysa Malacha B'Tisha B'Av, Ein Aroya Simen Bracha La'olam. Our Tosis is divided basically into three parts. The first part deals with an understanding of the Diri Maschil, namely the consequences of doing work on Tisha B'Av. The second part deals with something not mentioned by the Gemara, of additional prohibitions concerning lessening pleasure on Tisha B'Av. And the third deals with aspects of the Seuda HaMafsekes, of the final meal that we eat before Tisha B'Av. So we start with the first part. The Gemara records the statement of Rabbi Akiva that even though the Mishnah and Masechta Pesachim tells us that there is no absolute prohibition of doing work on Tisha B'Av, and it depends on local custom, but Rabbi Akiva writes that Kala Osa Malacha B'Tisha B'Av Ein Aroya Simen Bracha La'olam, which is the Diri Maschil of Tosfos, namely that those who do Malacha on Tisha B'Av, they do not see any blessing forever. So on this, Tosfos comment, Kilomar, meaning Osa Malacha Sheragil Lasos B'Tisha B'Av Ein Aroya Simen Bracha La'olam, that in that particular form of labor that one is accustomed to doing on Tisha B'Av, he will not see blessing in that forever. What Tosfos seemed to be negating is an alternate understanding of the Gemara, a more radical understanding that anyone who does work on Tisha B'Av will never see blessing in anything he does ever. So Tosfos is quick to point out that it's not as drastic, but rather refers to that particular form of labor that one engages in Tisha B'Av, and even regarding that he adds, Sherogil lasos b'Tisha B'Av, that he often does on Tisha B'Av. So only with those two criteria, that particular form of labor, as well as the fact that he does it often, so then he won't see any blessing concerning that, and presumably even not on Tisha B'Av, because of the fact that he violated at least the spirit of the day, even though there is no formal prohibition of doing work on Tisha B'Av, as we mentioned, but nonetheless it is highly improper. In this regard, perhaps Tosfos are arguing slightly with Rashi, because Rashi in the Maschil Ein Aroya Simen Bracha also writes similarly to Tosfos, may osa malacha, from that malacha. So Rashi is agreeing that it's not that he's not going to see blessing at all in anything he does, but only from that malacha. But it could be that Rashi is more machmer than Tosfos is, that even if he does the malacha once on Tisha B'Av, so his punishment will be that he won't see blessing from that malacha ever, not only if he's ragil to do so. Now Tosfos moves on to the second part, additional restrictions concerning not engaging in pleasurable activities on Tisha B'Av. V'chayev adam l'tzayir u'lamayit b'chvodo u'v'hana osav. A person is obligated to afflict himself and to lessen his glory and his pleasures on Tisha B'Av. And as an example, shem haya rogil lishkav al shnei karim, if one is accustomed to sleep on two, perhaps translated as pillows or maybe mattresses, lo yishkav kiyam al echad, he should only lie on Tisha B'Av on one of them. Aval, Tosis right, notwithstanding that, however, ubris omenikos einan chayavos kuli hai, that pregnant women and nursing women are not obligated to such an extent of lessening pleasure, she'einam yecholos etztar ba'atzman, because they don't have the ability to cause themselves that pain. It'll have detrimental effects on their health. Now, where did Tosfos get this idea from, that beyond what the Gemara tells us directly, what we're now to do on Tisha B'Av, that one should seek out other venues of lessening pleasure? So presumably this is Tosfos Shitasim, as we mentioned, on Lamed Amud Aleph. So there, the Gemara discussed the viewpoints of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who holds that you're supposed to lessen the amount of wine that you drink at the Seudah Mafsekes, and Rav Yehuda held that you have to turn over the beds. And also his personal practice was to sit between Tanur v'Kirayim, between the various heating appliances on the floor for the Seudah Mafsekes. So Tosfos on Lamed Amud Aleph, Paskin Halacha L'Maisa, and the bottom Tosfos, the Maschil of Alpha Gaf, that one has to lessen one's drinking on Tisha B'Av. At first glance, as we noted, that seems to be inconsistent with the Psak, because we don't Paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Passing like the Chachamim. And we explained that Rav Shimon Gamliel includes a Chumrah and a Kula. A Chumrah that you're supposed to lessen the amount you drink, and a Kula that you're allowed to drink wine in the Seudah Mafsekes, it just has to be less than your normal practice. So Tosis are of the opinion that we accept the Chumrah of Rav Shimon Gamliel. We just don't accept the Kula. Namely, that when you're drinking other beverages that are allowed to be drunk during the Seudah Mafsekes, including, as Tosis writes, Shechar, some kind of alcoholic beverage, even though some Rishonim say you're not supposed to drink that at all during the Siddur Mafsekes, but those that seem to allow it, but it has to be less than usual. The same with other mashkim. Perhaps only alcoholic beverages have to be lessened. So again, Tosis maintained that this idea of Rav Shimon Gamliel of lessening pleasure on Tisha B'Av is accepted. Even though there it's talking about lessening pleasure during the Siddur Mafsekes, but perhaps we can suggest that it would be a kal v'chomer that one should lessen pleasure on Tisha B'Av itself. So it could be that Tosis here is extending it in another way to lessen the other pleasure in sleep, of instead of sleeping on two pillows, sleeping on one. And that same model of, in general, lessening pleasure on Tisha B'Av is brought out by Rabbi Huda, who obligates turning over the beds. And even though, as the Gemara indicates, and Tosis summarizes that in the next one, we don't paskin like Rabbi Huda in that regard, but we still extrapolate from Rabbi Huda this idea that we're supposed to lessen pleasure. So that's just that specific example of turning over the beds is not required. Tosis's leniency for pregnant women and nursing women also seems to come from the Gemara, because in that discussion between Rabbi Huda and the Chachamim, which appears on our page, on Laminam Beis, the Chachamim counted to Rabbi Huda, how could you obligate turning over the beds, but what are the pregnant women and the nursing women going to do? So Rabbi Huda writes that I admit with someone who's Eino Yachol, who can't, as a result of their medical state. So even though regarding Kfiya Samita, turning over the bed, we reject Rabbi Huda totally and hold that even regular people don't have to do that. But once again, Tosis extrapolate from that psak of Rabbi Yehuda, distinguishing between ordinary people and Ubris and Manikos, to things that we will apply, namely to have less pillows, so that we're not going to impose upon Ubris and Manikos. This ruling of Tosis is actually recorded by the Ramah in Simen Tov Kuf Nun Hei, Sif Beis. Now Tosis moved to the third part concerning the Siddur Mafsekes. This is the third narrow line. And we eat the final meal while it's still daytime. On a simple level, Tosis is pointing out that Tisha B'Av is a 25-hour fast, and therefore you have to stop before Bein Hashmashos, unlike other fast days which start at dawn. But now, interestingly, Tosis continue. V'chein nami b'yom ha-kippurim, and this is also true on Yom Kippur, tzorach lisod mib'od yom, one has to have the Siddur Mafsekes while it's still day. But now Tosis continue. The Tosefes Yom Kippurim in a Torah. Because adding on to Yom Kippur is a Torah obligation. Kedichsiv me erev va'ad erev. Uchsiv be'etzem ayom hazeh. Because, as the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Dav Tesamer Aleph, has pointed out in the Oz Vahar edition, raises a contradiction in Psukim in Parshas Emor, where on the one hand, the Torah commands us to fast me erev ad erev, from evening to evening. Sounds like that we have to start fasting on the 9th of Tishrei, Erev Yom Kippur. On the other hand, the Pasuk says, Be'etzem hayom hazeh, that only on the day itself, or the night and the day of the 10th, one has to fast. So from that, the Gemara derives that the core mitzvah is fasting on the 10th, but there's a mitzvah in a Torah of Tosefes Yom Kippurim to add on to the fasting, and simply speaking, also to not working, and all the other inuim, all the other prohibitions of Yom Kippur, on Erev Yom Kippur as well, both beforehand, on Erev Yom Kippur, as well as afterward, on Matzoh Yom Kippur. The fact that Tosis bring up the concept of Tosefes Yom Kippurim in the context of talking about Tisha B'Av might imply that Tosis maintain that just like Men HaTorah, there's a mitzvah of Tosefes Yom Kippurim, that Midrabbanan, there's a mitzvah of Tosefes of Tisha B'Av. It's not an absolute diuk, because maybe Tosis is just collecting the fast days when you have to stop eating while it's still daytime, as opposed to the fast days that start at dawn, and the only ones we have in our calendar are Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, but there's a distinction between them that concerning Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to add on at least a few minutes during the day because of the mitzvah Tosefes, and on Tisha B'Av there is no mitzvah Tosefes. That could be what Tosis is driving at, but the fact that Tosis put them together does sound like that they hold that there is actually a mitzvah derabanan of Tosefes on Tisha B'Av. The reality is that this is a three-way machlokas rishonim. The Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayos at the very end of our Masechta writes explicitly that there is a mitzvah to add, in his words, just like Yom Kippur, min hachol al hakodesh. He refers to Tisha B'Av as Kodesh. There's a mitzvah derabanan of Tosefes Tisha B'Av. That is not the accepted opinion in the Rishonim. There's a debate whether the Rambam paskin like that in the Mishnah Torah or not. The Magen Mishnah discusses that. And on the opposite extreme, we have the view of the Ramban, which appears in the Lochemes Hashem in his commentary on the Rif in the first parak, as well as in the Torah Sa'odam, that there's no such thing as Tosefes Tisha B'Av, not as an obligation and not as a reality that you could take upon yourself, that even if you take in the fast early, it's not a binding commitment. And the middle view, which is actually the accepted view, that of the Rif in the first parak, it's also accepted by the Rosh, quoting the Rif, that there's no obligation, midrabanan, to take on Tisha B'Av earlier than Bein HaShemashos, but if one does, it's a binding commitment. So again, it could be that Tosfos imply, like the Rambam, that there's actually a mitzvah derabanan to add on to Tisha B'Av. As we mentioned, one could be docha that implication. Tosfos now continue to elaborate on an important halacha concerning taking in the fast, and he starts by discussing the halacha concerning Yom Kippur, and then applies it to Tisha B'Av. We're in the eighth narrow line, in the middle of the line, Aval Mikol Makom, but nonetheless, Ein Lesser Lishtos Misha'ochal Seudah Mafsekes V'Adayin Havi Hayom Gadol. One should not prohibit drinking, and presumably the same would be true for eating, when one has eaten the final meal, and I'm adding in and finish that final meal, and there's still a lot of time to go, even though on Yom Kippur is a mitzvah of Tosefes to add on to it. But if you have quite a bit of time left, just the fact that you finished the meal does not directly get you into a state of fasting. Kedemash of Yerushalmi, as is implied from the Yerushalmi. The Gilyan HaShas from Rabbi Akiva Eger points out that we don't have this in our Yerushalmi, but we do have it in the Medrash Eicha in Perek Gimel. And indeed, the Tosis in Erev in Daf Mem Aleph Amid Aleph, who also quotes this Medrash, quoted from an Eicha Rabasi, not from Yerushalmi. What is the Medrash state? The Rav Yossi Ikla LeBatzra. Rav Yossi visited the town of Batzra, which is presumably in Bavel. The version we have in the Medrash, which is quoted by the Tosas and Erevin, is not Rav Yossi, but Rav Yehuda ben Seira, and not Batzra, but Nitzivin. So what happened? Ochal Seudim Afsekes. We'll read it according to the version of our Tosas. The Rav Yossi had his final meal on Erev Yom Kippur. Osa Lagabe Deresh Kanishta. He came before the head of the Knesset, meaning the presumably the head of the base Knesset, the head of the community, Bahavasoid, and the head of the community was having his Seudim Afsekes on Erev Yom Kippur. Recall that Rav Yossi already had had his. Amar Lei Ahu Resh Kanishta. So that particular head of the community asked Rav Yossi, Saodetzli, please have the Seuda in my house. Amar Lei, so Rav Yossi responded, Achlis v'afsikis. I ate and I already finished my meal, so I don't want to have another meal. Amar Lo, so he told him, the Reish Kanishta, the head of the community, Ashkach alai, please pay attention to me, meaning listen to my pleading to have you over as a guest. The Lo Leimrun, that people shouldn't say, Hadein Gavra, this person, namely Rabbi Yossi, this great Rav, Lo Ashkach alai, didn't pay attention to me, meaning didn't care to accept my invitation. Obviously, he doesn't think too highly of me. So the head of the community pleaded with him, please accept my invitation. They shouldn't think that the reason you're refusing is because you think I'm not worthy enough of having you over as a guest. So indeed, Rabbi Yossi conceded, and he had the meal, again, in his house. And the Medrash continues, Ochal mikol igul patit. He ate from each, I guess, round mizonos-like dish, one bread or one loaf. Ochal mikol tavshil v'tavshil. And he ate from each cooked dish, chad pas. It sounds like also one piece of bread, but it's a tavshil. So the Mefarshim on the Medrash point out that it's in the language of pasos o sapitim, which you have by the mincha, meaning a piece. He had one piece from each cooked dish. V'shasa mikol chavis chad kosa. And he drank from every barrel one cup. And the Medrash humorously comments that by the time all these dishes were served, it was a total of 80. And then the Reish Kanishta commented to him, I thought you had your meal already. Obviously, you were still hungry. So he said, the reason that the guf is sometimes referred to as nefesh is because it's nefisha. Nefisha in Aramaic means it's expansive, it increases. There's always room to have more appetite. So what Tosis is deriving from that Medrash is that even though Rabbi Yossi had had a meal, and he stopped his meal, he even said so, achlis v'afsikis, but nonetheless, he had another meal. So obviously, the stopping of the meal is not a binding commitment to start the fast. And Tosis then conclude, v'hochi hilchasa, and that indeed is the halacha. Im adayin hayom gadol, if there's still a lot of time left of the day, so you'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Tosefis later. La'acha she'ochal sudam afsekes, after you had the final meal, mutar lishtos, afilo erev Yom Kippurim, you're allowed to continue drinking. Again, Tosis, for the second time, doesn't mention eating, but presumably there's no reason to distinguish, because drinking would also be a violation of fasting, so once you're allowed to drink, you should be allowed to eat as well. Afilo erev Yom Kippurim, even on erev Yom Kippur. Then Tosis conclude, v'kol shekein erev Tisha B'Av, and all the more so on erev Tisha B'Av, after the sudam afsekes, one is allowed to continue. What is the kol shekein? So presumably the kol shekein, the kal v'chomer, is because Tisha B'Av is the Rabbanan. If you should assume that our diak earlier was incorrect, that on Tisha B'Av there isn't a mitzvah, not even me the Rabbanan, of Tosefes, so then the kol shekein could be not only that Tisha B'Av is the Rabbanan, but all the more so on Erev Tisha B'Av when there's no mitzvah Tosefes at all. But if our diuk earlier was correct, that there is a mitzvah Tosefes derabanan on Erev Tisha B'Av, according to Tosis at least, then the Kol Shekein is because Yom Kippur is Minat Torah and Tisha B'Av is derabanan. So this psak of Tosis is indeed, as we mentioned earlier, discussed by the Tosis and Erev in Daf Mem Aleph and Aleph, and it's also paskened by the Rif and the Rosh, as well as the Shulchan Aruch in two places, in Hilchos Tisha B'Av in Siman Tov Kuf Nun Gimel, and in Hilchos Yom Kippur in Siman Tov Resh Ches, that just ending the Sudam of Sekes is not enough to get you into a state of fasting, even though we paskin like the Rif, that even on Erev Tisha B'Av, when you formally accept fasting, that does bind the fast upon you, but just stopping the meal is not considered a binding commitment. Nonetheless, since there are poskim who are machmer on this, for a variety of reasons, either because they reject the diak from this medrash for reasons we're not going to go into now, or they hold that it is customary to at least mentally have in mind to accept the fast when you finish the meal. So because of that, the Mishnah Berurah recommends from the Magen Avraham to specifically have in mind when you're finishing the meal on Erev Tisha B'Av and certainly on Erev Yom Kippur, to have in mind that you're not taking in the fast, so you should be able to smoothly, according to all opinions, be able to eat and drink until the time the fast begins. Again, on Erev Yom Kippur, that would be a few minutes at least before, in order to mekayim the mitzvah of Tosefes, and on Erev Tisha B'Av itself, it would be a moment before sunset. Tazdi Mimaskil Amarava Alocha Kitana Didan Vlohodu Lochachamim, and in our Gemara we have two extra words, Kol Iker. The Gemara has a Shakla Vitaria give and take between Rabbi Huda and the Chachamim, and Rabbi Huda, who had obligated everybody to turn over their beds, Kfiya Samita, was challenged by the Chachamim, as we mentioned in our presentation of the previous Tosis briefly, what's going to be with the Ubras and Menikos, the pregnant women, the nursing women. So Rabbi Yehuda responded, well, they can't do it. I only obligated those who can. And then the Gemara quotes a Braisa that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim where you can't do it, and the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Yehuda where you can do it. So if everyone's agreeing to everything where you can, you have to turn over the beds, and where you can't, then you don't have to turn over the beds, namely to sleep on such a bed that you can't do that. So what's the distinction between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says other beds are the distinction between them. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to turn over all the beds in the house, even the ones you're not sleeping on. And according to Chachamim, you only have to turn over the bed you're sleeping on when you are capable of that kind of diminishing of pleasure. So the Gemara concludes, notwithstanding that Braisa that has the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda much closer than we think. So Rava writes, Hilchasa Kitana Didan. The halacha is like our Tana, meaning the Chachamim in our Mishnah, not the Chachamim in the Braisa, where the Chachamim in our Mishnah state across the board, v'lo hodu lo Chachamim. They don't agree. Sounds like we have it explicitly in the Gemara, the two words, kol ikar, at all, that they do not obligate turning over any beds, even for one who can, and even the bed that you're actually sleeping on. And that is the psak. So that's what Tosis now summarized. Pirish, meaning she'ain tzarich lichpos hamita, that you don't have to turn over the bed, meaning any of the beds, against the Chacham of the Braisa, who at least admit concerning the bed you sleep on. Now Tosis comment that halacha l'maisa, we already stated that you don't do it on Tisha B'Av, but even for Avelus, where it is obligatory according to all opinions. So Tosas comment v'ha'idna, nowadays the chashin and lechshafim that were concerned about witchcraft lo avdina and kfiya samita v'afilu ba'ovil. We don't turn over the beds even for a mourner. To explicate a little further, the Tosas and Moed Katan quote the Talmud Yerushalmi that an ovel who is a guest in a hotel of sorts that has non-Jewish guests as well is not chayiv in kfiya samita, because the non-Jews will think that the Jew is engaged in some kind of kshafim or witchcraft. This is similar to the Gemara in Pesachim, that if you have a hole between two Jewish homes, so for Bedikas Chametz, each one has to search his part of the hole. But if you have a hole between a Jew and a non-Jew, so you don't have to search that hole altogether, because the non-Jew is going to think that you're doing witchcraft. So similarly, Tosis here, as well as Tosis and Moed Katan, write that nowadays, since non-Jews frequent our homes, if they're going to see the beds turned over, they're going to think that we're somehow engaging in sorcery, and it's going to lead to danger and minimally ill will, so we're able to not keep this din derabanan. So that's what Tosis are referring to here. Tosis and Moed Katan give an additional reason that based on the structure of our beds, apparently in the days of Tosis, they had beds with legs, and then there were also posts coming up from the bed. So if you would turn that over, so the post would become the legs, and the legs would become the posts. So it really wouldn't be nikar, it wouldn't be so noticeable that you turned over the bed. So you're not really going to accomplish anything by turning over the bed, and therefore we don't do it anymore. It's interesting that even nowadays the practice is not to turn over the beds, even though we generally don't have beds with posts, and we also don't have non-Jews frequenting our, at least our bedrooms too often. So one could make a case that nowadays we should turn over the bed, but halacha lemaisa, even bizmanenu, it is not the practice to turn over beds during avelus. Tosis also referred to avodim ushvachos, non-Jewish servants that were frequent in their homes. Perhaps the non-Jewish household help, even nowadays, for those who have it, would also justify this practice of not doing kviya samita, although not everyone has household help. Nonetheless, the common custom is not to do kviya samita nowadays. What is the purpose of turning over the beds, both during avelus and on Tisha B'Av, according to the view of Rabbi Yehuda, which we don't accept? So presumably on Tisha B'Av, it's an idea of lessening pleasure. And that particular instantiation of lessening pleasure, we don't accept on Tisha B'Av. But on Avelus, in addition to the idea of lessening pleasure, or perhaps instead of the idea of lessening pleasure, this is actually a machlokas achronim, whether Kviya Samita also includes the chiyav of lessening pleasure, which I'm not going to elaborate on now. The Gemara Moed Katan on Tesvav Amid Beis tells us is based on the concept of the bed is where human life is created, and by turning over the bed, that indicates that Hashem says, so to speak, that I created a Tzura Sa'adam in the world, a Tzalam Elikim, and because of sin, death came into the world, and therefore there has to be death and Avelus. Thus lessening the manifestation of the earthly Tzalam Elikim. Based on that, Soloveitchik thought that that's why we cover the mirrors. Also, that one shouldn't see oneself. In other words, it should be a lessening of the viewing of the Tzelem Elokim in a Shiva house because of that concept. And even though we don't follow Kfiya Samita, but that concept of indicating that because of sin, the Tzelem Elokim was taken away, we try to keep at least in a different way. As an addendum to our analysis, I was assuming in our presentation, both in this Tosis and the previous one, that Rabbi Huda, who obligates Kfiya Samita on Tisha B'Av, is assuming that that's a din in lessening pleasure. This has to be elaborated upon, because as we mentioned, concerning Avelus, the Gemara only mentions the reason of the lessening of the Tzelem Elokim as a result of the death of the relative, so that reason should necessarily apply on Tisha B'Av. So why would Rabbi Yehuda obligate it on Tisha B'Av? Maybe that's exactly why the Chachamim hold that it's not relevant on Tisha B'Av, because the reason is not relevant. On the other hand, it could be that Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's an additional reason for turning over the bed, namely to lessen the pleasure. And even though the reason for the lessening of the Tzelem Elokim doesn't apply on Tisha B'Av, but the other reason of lessening pleasure does apply, and it was that stance that I was taking in the presentation of the Tosis. If we don't go that route and assume that somehow Rabbi Yehuda holds that the reason does apply on Tisha B'Av, or alternately that maybe since that's the practice for a regular mourner, the practice applies even where the reason doesn't apply, so then some of what we said before would have to be modified. To review the context of the Gemara, the Mishnah had stated that Lohoi Yom Tov Mli Yisrael, Kachamish Aser B'Av, V'Chiyom Kippurim, that Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur were the happiest of occasions for Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara says that Yom Kippur, we understand, was the day that the second Luchos were given, and also eternally is the day of Slicha Mechila. But what about Tu B'Av? In the language of the Gemara, Bishlama Yom Kippurim Shem De'ispe Slicha Mechila, Yom Shenitnu Bo Luchos Achronos, Ela Tesvav B'Av, Mayhi. What is the significance of the 15th of Av? So to this, the Gemara has six answers, and Tosfos Dibur Maschil is the first of the six, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, Yom Shehutru Shvatim Lavo Zeh Bazeh, the day that the tribes were allowed to intermarry with each other. And as the Gemara elaborates, as Rashi further explains, that any daughter who had no brothers, so she would be the one to inherit the land in Eretz Yisrael. So as the Torah outlines at the end of Parshas Maaseh, she would only be able to marry within her tribe, so that the children, who of course are from the Shevet of the father, should not take the mother's inheritance outside of her original tribe. So the Gemara explains that that was only for one generation. And when that Horah Shah, that temporary halacha, was stopped, so that was a day of Simcha, that all the tribes would be able to intermarry with each other without exception, including a Bas Yoreshes Nachla, a daughter who inherited land in Eretz Yisrael. So on this answer, Tosis writes four words, or two words and an abbreviation, that shook up the world of the Achronim, because his words are quite cryptic. Tosis writes, again, Dibi Maskel Yom Shut Rashvatim Lava Zebazeh, Pirish, meaning the Hainu Yotes, a simple expansion of that Rashi Tevos, is Yom Tov. The Hainu Yom Tov. So what is the meaning of the day that the Shvatim were able to intermarry with each other? That this is a Yom Tov. So the Achronim who deal with this Tosis all ask, what is Tosis trying to say? That's exactly the question of the Gemara. That the Mishnah stated that there were no happier days than Chamish Asar B'Av and Yom Kippurim. Obviously, we're referring to that as Yom Tovim, and then the Gemara is trying to seek out various reasons why it's a Yom Tov. So what does Tosis mean by saying on the first reason, Pirish Tahainu Yom Tov, that it's a Yom Tov? That's exactly what the Gemara was trying to do. So starting with the Chidor of Chaim Yosef David Azulai in his Chael Sechuvis, Chaim Shaul, who gives six explanations as to what Tosis is trying to add here. And in more recent times, when I was doing a search on this on the internet, so I came across an article that was written in the framework of the Otzra Chochma, the famous database of thousands of Sfarim. So someone put an article together based on, I guess, Achronim had discovered in that database, a total of 20 explanations of this Tosis. So just to give over a cross-section of what I think Lanias Daiti are the more straightforward ones. So the first approach, which I thought of Lanias Daiti, and it's also quoted in that article as one of the 20, that the Gemara, in asking what Tu B'Av is, used the words Mahi, what is it? And that question is answered with the six answers of the Gemara. Now, in the broader context of the Gemara, since it's contrasting it with Yom Kippur, where it's not just explaining what happened on Yom Kippur, but trying to indicate that those occasions were reasons for celebration, namely the second Luchos being given and it being a day of Slicha Mechila. But the words Mahi in isolation could be asking, what is it, meaning what happened on it? And to that, the Gemara answers, as the first of six, Yom Shotu Shvatim Lavozevzeh, when the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry, even for a daughter who inherited land. So Tosis just further clarify, Pirish Dayanu Yamtif, that we're not asking a historical question of what happened on that day. We're asking about what made it into a Yamtif. So that's what Tosis is explaining, that the day that the tribes were allowed to intermarry is not just a historical event, but a cause for celebration, namely that there'll be greater Achdus and Klal Yisrael and greater unity by no restrictions in terms of which Shevet could marry which Shevet. Apparently, the other 19 answers are unhappy with that, that's quite obvious also from the Gemara, that the context is about why it's a Yom Tov, not just a historical question. Continuing with some other interpretations, some of the Achronim suggest interesting suggestions of perhaps typos in the Tosfos that led to a misunderstanding of what he's trying to say. The Elio Rava says that he had heard that the original Girsan Tosfos was not the word Yotes as an abbreviation, but spelled out Yom Tov, and the last word Tov was meant itself to be an abbreviation, namely Pirish Tahainu Yom Tes Vav Bet, meaning Yom Tu B'Av. And what Tosis is trying to do is to explain that the 15th of Av was the day that, I guess, the Sanhedrin of that generation determined that this Horah Shah temporary law no longer applies, that that happened on Tu B'Av. Okay, one could ask on that answer, isn't that obvious from the fact that the Gemara says Yom Shotru Shvatim Lavozevzeh, that there was Tu B'Av? This article from the Otzra Chochma, they quote a different suggestion in the name of Avram Bik from the town of Molev, that perhaps instead of Yud Tes, the original Gersa was Yud Nun. And that was an abbreviation for Yoreshes Nachala, a daughter who inherits land. So Tosis are clarifying not the fact that it's a Yomtif, but what do you mean the tribes were allowed to marry into each other? They were always allowed to marry into each other. So Tosis is elaborating something the Gemara didn't say explicitly, even though it referenced the Benos Lavchad, but Tosis, as he oftentimes does in this Masechta, as we've mentioned a few times, sometimes acts as a basic commentary like Rashi, Pirish Tahainu Yereshes Nachla, meaning a daughter who inherited land, would then be able to marry whoever she wants, even from another tribe. Okay, an interesting understanding. Assuming that it means Yamtif, so one of the more basic answers that's given by the Chidah, as well as the Elio Rabbah, although they give slightly different explanations, I'll present the explanation from the perspective of Elio Rabbah, that what Tosis is implicitly asking is that Tu B'Av is not just the Yamtif, it's something that is above all the others to some extent. As the Mishnah says, Lo hoyu yamim tovim bi Yisrael ke chamisha sabav yom kippurim. So what Tosis is trying to explain is, why is it a super yomtiv? So what Tosis does is, on the very first answer given, namely yom shehut rashvatim lavo zeh bazeh, he explains, pirish tahinu yomtiv, that makes it into a basic yomtiv. Then the Gemara explains that there are five other things that happened on that day. And that makes it into a super yomtiv. And that directly parallels Yom Kippur, where originally the second luchos were given. So that makes it into a yomtiv. And then throughout the generations, it is a day of forgiveness. So that makes it into a super yomtiv. So Tosis, by writing Pirish Tahinu Yomtiv, is explaining that the first explanation tells you the basic yomtiv idea. The others add a new layer to it. And finally, and this is given by the Chidah, as well as others with different variations, that one shouldn't think that the day of Tu B'Av is a day where you're not allowed to work, or even a day, and this is actually debated in the Achronim, that one is not allowed to fast or give eulogies. But rather, the extent of the festivity of the day is that it's a commemorative day expressed by gladness of past either salvations, or in this case of the Dirimaslotosis, unifications of Klal Yisrael. So Pirish Dahainu Yomtiv, that's the extent of the Yomtiv, the joy in recalling that happy historical event, rather than some specific halachas that apply in it. Tais Dirimaskil Yom Shabo Kolu Meise Midbar. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, as presented by Rabbi Bar Barachana, that Tu B'Av was the day that after the decree against that entire generation based on the sin of the Meraglim, that they would die in the Midbar. So that decree stopped on Tu B'Av. So Tosis elaborate, as does Rashi here as well, as follows. Kidamrinan, as we say in the Medrash Eicha. They point out this is in the introduction to the Medrash Eicha, and it also appears in the parallel passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi in Ar Masechta. Kol Tisha B'Av hayu osin kivrein. Every Tisha B'Av they would dig their own graves, the members of that generation. V'shochman v'sochan, and they would lie in them. V'lamachar ha'kruz yotze, and the next day the call went out. Hibodlu ha'chayim, let the living separate from the dead. Presumably the reason they dug their own graves is because there were so many people that died each year, so this way the graves would already be dug, never, for all those who would die that year. So the next day, all those who survived the night would be told to get up out of the grave, and those who didn't get up, those would be the ones who would be buried. Tos continue from the Medrash, V'osa Shana Shekol Sagzera, and that year, namely the 40th year that the decree stopped, Kamu Kulam, so all those who lay down in the graves, all got up. And they thought that maybe they made a mistake in the day of the month that they had dug the graves on the 9th of Av. They thought maybe it's not the 9th of Av. Maybe it's an earlier day and we dug and laid down in the graves too early. They waited the 10th, the 11th, all the way till the 15th. And they saw the moon was full. And clearly it was the middle of the month and past the 9th of Av. Oz Yodu. Tosis continue, and then they knew Shakol Sagzera that the Gzera was over, also Yomtiv, and therefore they made a Yomtiv. So even though the decree ultimately stopped at 9th of Av, but it was only known that it stopped on the 15th of Av, and therefore the festification was established on the 15th. This is what Tosis quotes from the Medrash, and again in a parallel passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Tosis now elaborate from the Rashbam and Bava Basra, because there the Gemara basically has our sugya as well, so the Rashbam comments on it. Upirish Rashbam, in parentheses, they know Bava Basra, Kol Chafal Chamar Aleph, Kol HaMem Shonim, Lo hayu meisim ela b'tisha b'av. All 40 years, they only died on Tisha B'av. Now, I looked at the Rashbam there. He doesn't say that explicitly, but that's what's implied. And the reality is, it's a little curious why Tosfos pins it on the Rashbam, because the Medrash itself says that they dug the graves on Tisha B'av, and the Rashbam there doesn't say anything more than that. And if you're going to say that we're able to be medayik and infer from that that that's when they died, so then why pin it on the Rashbam? Why not pin it on the Medrash? Somewhat tzarichin on that. Okay, we continue in the Tosfos. V'chol Tisha B'av hayumesim. Now our girsa is Chaf Aleph Ufrotrot. So the Mefarshim, the Marsha, and others note that this is not what it says in the Medrash, and this is not what it says in the Rashbam. Once we finish the Tosfos, we'll come back to try to resolve this girsa. So for now, we'll go with what probably should be the girsa here, that uvachal tisha b'av hayumesim tesvav elef ufrotrot, meaning that every year, 15,000, and ufrotrot meaning change, meaning a number that doesn't go up to 1,000, so every year, 15,000 plus people would die. So what Tosfos is doing is quoting the Rashbam to have two additional details over the Medrash. Number one, that they only died in Tisha B'Av. And number two, based on the fact that they only died in Tisha B'Av, so on every Tisha B'Av, dividing the numbers to the 600 and somewhat more thousand Jews upon whom this was decreed. So if you work out the math, so each year, 15,000 plus would die. Tosis further elaborates, a Mefarash Hasam, and he explains there, the Oso Protrot Ola Lemem Shanim Tesvav Elef, that extra above the 15,000 that didn't get up to 1,000, when you added up all those extras across 40 years, that would add up to an additional 15,000. So in the Rashbam Bava Basra, I didn't actually see an explicit mention of that. I saw that the Masha has to give some Mefurashasam, that it's explained there or explicit there, namely in the Medrash. Indeed, in the Medrash Eicha, there is a Lashon that doesn't exactly say the words that the leftovers added up to 15,000, but the Girsa there does imply that the leftovers together with the core 15,000 added up to 600,000. So presumably that's what Tosfos are referring to. The math is quite clear as follows. 600,000 divided by 40 is 15,000 per year. But as we know, the first year, even though there were difficulties, the Chet Egel, etc., but there was no decree against the Jews to die in the Midbar. The entire first year, clearly the Jews were not dying because of the Chet Meraglim, which didn't happen yet. The second year, Av of the second year specifically, was when the Chet Meraglim occurred. As we know, that's one of the tragic things we mourn on Tisha B'Av. And then they didn't die either, except for the Meraglim. They died on the anniversary of that terrible sin, namely the 9th of Av. So we're left with 38 years, the first year where they didn't die, and the year of the Chet itself, which is the second year. So you have 38 years. So when you take 600,000, and somewhat more than that, 603,000, and you divide by 38 years, so you get 15,000 and about 700 and so. So that presumably is what the Rashbam means by the Tesvav Elef, again using 15 rather than Chof Aleph, which seems to be, at first glance, seems to be a typo in our Tosfos. So that's the Tesvav and Frotrot. Now when you take all of that extra, all of those 700 pluses, and you multiply that by, Tosfos say 40, but Mer Preftes Lav Dafka, by 38, you get another 15,000. Namely, when you're taking the 600,000 using round numbers, you divide by 38, you get 15,000 plus. So if you're going to take the plus and then remultiply it by 38, you're going to get another 15,000. Unfortunately, rounding out that enormous amount of Jews who died as a result of the Chet Meraglim. Now, there's still a little bit of a problem here, because the last year they didn't die. And the number that we gave earlier, which was 38 years in which they died, which led to the 15,000 and change, that includes the year they didn't die. So we should really have to divide the 600,000 by 37. And that is going to get you 16,000 and change each year. That's one of the many kashas that Tosfos and Bava Basra ask on the Rashbam's pshat, ultimately the Midrashic pshat. So Tosfos there, quote Rabbeinu Tam, and perhaps the Rashbam agrees with this answer of his brother, Rabbeinu Tam, even though he doesn't spell it out, that the last year, it wasn't just that the 600,000 Jews who were all supposed to die already died, but that the last 15,000 were given a break, Rachamei Hashem, and they didn't die. So it was supposed to be 15,000 and change that died each year, and that's indeed what had happened till the last year when those 15,000 and change didn't die. So for now, we'll go with that pshat, and that is what Tosfos is referring to here by quoting that Medrash and the Rashbam there. Now Tosfos quote an alternate interpretation. hard to know whether this interpretation is arguing on the Medrash or trying to go with the Medrash with a slightly different interpretation. But this interpretation is as follows. V'yesh mefarshim, and some explain, sh'ayameisim v'chol yom, that they would die every day. Not like Tosis say from the Rashbam that they only died on Tisha B'Av. Again, I humbly pointed out I didn't see that in the Rashbam explicitly. It sounds like that from the Medrash, but the Medrash doesn't say it explicitly either. But this commentary says they used to die every day, not just on Tisha B'Av. Ach, rov ha'meisim ha'yu la'olam b'Tisha B'Av. But most of them died on Tisha B'Av. Presumably, this Yesh Mefarshim is going with that approach, based on the Medrash, that they used to dig their graves on Tisha B'Av, and that because most of them would die on Tisha B'Av. So this would take the burden off of grave diggers. But they did die in other times as well. On the 15th day of Av, the decree stopped. How did they know that the decree was over? Because on that day, the 15th of Av, no one died. It had always been the case, ever since the Chet HaMeraglim, that there were always people who were dying every day, but that day no one died. So they knew that that day the decree had stopped. For also Yom Tov, and there they made a Yom Tov. So according to this pshat, the main distinction being that according to the Medrash, the 15th was a holiday because then they saw it was a full moon and they knew the decree was over, that it was past the 9th of Av for sure. And according to the second pshat, they made the holiday on the 15th because no one died that day. Again, hard to know whether the Yesh Mefarshim is going with the Medrash, because if it is going with the Medrash, and that's how they knew that most of them died on the 9th of Av because they dug the graves. So why not go with the Medrash and say that that's why the 15th was a celebration, because then they saw the full moon? Unless maybe the Yesh Mefarshim is saying that most of them died on Tisha B'Av because of the other Midrashic idea that Tisha B'Av was established as a Leil Bechila Doros, as a day of crying for all eternity, including in that generation. So maybe this Yesh Mefarshim is not going with the Medrash at all. It's interesting that Tosfos B'Av Basra gives an alternate approach, not going with the Medrash at all, because our Gemara seems to indicate there were two causes for celebration. One, that they stopped dying, and two, because they stopped dying, so Hashem communicated with Moshe Rabbeinu again, or at least communicated him directly, b'simcha. So, simply speaking, those are two causes of celebration. And that's what it sounds like from Rashi here and the Rashbam there. But Tosfos B'Av Basra suggests there's only one cause for celebration. The fact that they stopped dying wasn't really a cause for celebration, that 600,000 people died. According to that understanding, there was no break of the last 15,000. The cause for celebration was as a result of the fact that they stopped dying, Hashem started communicating with Moshe Rabbeinu directly again. So why was it only on Tu B'Av that Moshe Rabbeinu got the direct prophecy again, if the full 600,000 had already died as of that last Tisha B'Av, on which the last group of people died? So what was subsequently holding up the prophecy after that 9th of Av? Because Klal Yisrael were in mourning from the 9th of Av until the 15th of Av, which is exactly 7 days of mourning. So from Tes Av until Tu B'Av, they were in a state of mourning. And since Klal Yisrael were in a state of mourning, and Moshe Rabbeinu only got Nevuah because of Klal Yisrael, so since Klal Yisrael were not in a state of Simcha, so Moshe Rabbeinu could not receive prophecy, which needs to be in a state of Simcha. Going back as an addendum to perhaps justify our Girsa of Chof Aleph Elef Ufrot wrote, so Rabbi Akiva Eiger notes that the Tshuvas Chavis Yoyer, in the very back of his Sefer, quotes a few Tshuvas from Reb David Oppenheim, who apparently was a contemporary of his, and he suggests that whenever Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos, so they wouldn't die. Since Tosfos writes that they would dig their graves in the night of Tisha B'Av, and of course if Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos, that would be the night of Shabbos, during which it would be prohibited to dig the graves. So if you subtract all the Tisha B'Avs that would fall out on Shabbos in the 38 years, or more accurately, the 37 years, because the last year they didn't die, which Rav Oppenheim figures out is a total of 28 years, because 9 Tisha B'Avs in a 37-year period would fall out on Shabbos. So then the numbers have to be recalculated, and when they did die, it would turn out to be 21,000 and change rather than 15,000 and change. Quite a brilliant answer. It's assuming something, that when Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos, they didn't die. Perhaps then they would dig their graves earlier or the day after, if we wouldn't assume like of David Oppenheim. And in any case, on a simple level, since Tosfos is quoting the Rashbam, and the Rashbam of Bava Basra does explicitly write, Tes Vav Elef Ufrot wrote, and it is what appears in the Medrash and in the Rishalmi. So although it's certainly a brilliant answer, but perhaps it's simple to say that this is just a scribal error, and instead of saying Chof Aleph Ufrot wrote, it actually should say Tesvav Aleph Ufrot wrote.